Whether you're singing songs dressed as a traffic cone at the Ali Pali, roaring yourself hoarse on the first day of Cheltenham, or hugging a complete stranger after a 98th minute win. At Virgin Bet, we always want you to have a great time without ever losing track of your betting. So whilst there's no such thing as a dead cert, it's a good bet will help you keep it fun and safe. Visit our safer gambling hub for more info. Virgin Bet, a good bet. Bet responsibly. 18 plus, gamblerware.org.
Remind me to bring photo ID.
Reminder set.
Babe, can you make sure I don't forget my photo ID when I vote?
All right, love.
You'll need photo ID to vote on the 1st of May. Don't have ID? Apply for free voter ID now. Find out more at electoralcommission.org.uk/voter ID.
Afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Drop the Gloves. Tim's back. He's got a tan, fresh tan from Savannah. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, the weekend was great. Savannah, what a cool city. So much history, so much just going on. Every block is something to do. So that was a lot of fun. Charleston was great, too. And we have I have family in Charleston, right on one of the islands there in the bay. So they had a really nice house on the beach. We got to spend Easter dinner with them. So that was really nice. And drove home, got home last night. And all was good. How are you? How was your Easter weekend?
It was all right. Hijacked by issues at the house, but it's okay.
Sure.
Boiler issues again, Tim.
No. Just,
I can't get away from this boiler. Tell me if you've heard this before, if I'm boring people, but I spent all day Saturday out there doing stuff, doing lights, doing electrical, and then babying the boiler. And things were going well. You know, temperatures are rising, exhaust temperatures are rising, things are going good. And so I finally said, let's do it. Let's load her up and let her rip, Tater Ship. And so I'm checking in every 20 minutes and I'm about to leave because we were going to Easter Vigil Mass, my kids and I, which starts at 9 p.m. So this is around 7. And I go in my boiler room, which is in the garage, and the boiler is completely shut down. Total power failure. Nothing. Like nothing will go. I'm like, what the heck happened? And I was just there 10 minutes before. So I was angry, rightfully so, and I have this fire poker that's made of, it's like a piece of rebar. Grabbed that, took out my frustrations, bent it right in half, got back to the boiler, went and got the wheelbarrow, and I was up to just up to here. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see what I'm doing, but it's up to, you know what I mean? I was done. I had just jammed the boiler full of wood, so there was probably 15 logs in there. I just went crazy. I grabbed them out by my hand, threw them in the wheelbarrow, just threw caution to the wind, just took them outside, dumped them in my driveway, got all the coals out with a piece of cardboard, put those in the wheelbarrow, threw them in the driveway, and I said, done with this thing, gone. And so I just kicked it until today, and I figured out what the problem was. They have a called a high limit temperature switch. The water gets too high, it'll shut the whole boiler off. While I was, I guess, doing other things with the boiler, I bumped that switch, and it should be set to 220, 200. I bumped it down to like 175. And so I got to 175, and the whole thing shut off. So anyways, that was just a nice Saturday kind of surprise. Easter was great. We went to my wife's house, my wife's parents' house for dinner, my wife's house. Yeah. That was nice. We didn't have to host or anything. And then here we are. Now I'm going to Indianapolis tomorrow or Thursday for a little talk to, it was like a coach's dinner that I'm going to just spread some of my knowledge and just see how that goes. But yeah, it's going good. We had the countertops installed today. They're doing the concrete work next week. Things are happening, moving and shaking. And then there's the NHL playoffs happening. So it's been a whirlwind of activities, Tim. So let's just jump right into it. What do you think?
Yeah, there's so many games that have happened since we last recorded. I think everyone is watching hockey every night, multiple games. It's a lot of fun. All the series have started except for one, the Florida series, which starts tonight. And there's a lot to talk about already. Some of the games have already been two games. Some of them have been just one. Let's start in the East. Let's start with last night's game between the Capitals and the Montreal Canadiens. And what a game it was, John.
Yeah, tale of two teams. You know, it's the youngest team in history to ever make the playoffs. The Capitals obviously icing a team average age of, I think, 19. With Hudson and Demidov.
Yeah.
What's that?
You said the Capitals, the Canadians.
The Canadians, excuse me. Yeah, they're just insanely young. They're green. They have no playoff experience outside of Brendan Gallagher and maybe Josh Anderson with his time with Columbus. So they're very, very green. And then you look across the ice, and it's the Washington Capitals. Most of those guys have won a Stanley Cup, if not won a cup, been on long playoff runs. Very old, very experienced, long in the tooth. They know what to expect game one. And this game kicked off right away like I thought it was. Capitals dominated the first 10 minutes. I think the Habs seemed overwhelmed. They took a little bit of time to settle in. The Caps were able to get a 2-0 lead. But then, boy, oh boy, there comes a time, Tim, when you have to look in the mirror. It's gut check time. And for the Canadians, you're playing the Washington Capitals. You're on the road. You're down 2-0. There's 10 minutes left in the third period. And it's like, what do? Do we just roll over and kick the can to next game? Or do we keep pushing? And there is a conscience decision to be made there. And you can do that extra thing. You can play hard. Look at Connor McDavid in Edmonton. He kicked it up a little bit, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But you have to give the Canadians their due. Even though they lost the game in overtime, 3-2, Alex Ovechkin, fantastic. They stepped up. And this 10-minute span in the third period, if I'm a Washington Capitals player, I'm nervous. They score that goal to make it 2-1 on the power play. Then all of a sudden, they score again 5 minutes later, Nick Suzuki, and they barely just missed from scoring for the rest of that 5 minutes. They were all over the Capitals. They should have won it in regulation time, but they didn't, and they go to overtime. Obviously, some controversy with the icing call. I agree with the Montreal fans. That should have been a non-icing. Patrick Laine was being interfered with friend of the show, Matt Roy. So there are some reasons to be a little upset if you're a Montreal Canadiens fan. But all in all, great first game. I think the referees, other than that icing call, did a fantastic job. They put the whistles away. Not a lot of power plays. They just let the boys play. And they played. There was hits. There was controversial plays. Josh Anderson stepping up for the Canadians. Tom Wilson running around. Even that young kid from Boston, Leonard, throwing the body around a little bit. It was a very enjoyable game for the Caps and Canadians, where it should have been a romp. 20-point difference in the regular season. The Capitals coming in flying high. Canadians, young kids. But what did I say, Tim? Don't give the Canadians a little bit of hope. Don't let them plant that seed. And I think that seed's planted, and it's watered.
Yeah, I think if you're the Canadians, you basically did everything you wanted to do in this game except for win, which I know was like the most important thing. But you saw a lot of stuff from basically, like you said, after the first 10 minutes or so, halfway through the first, they start to turn things on. They start to catch up a little bit. And then you are basically equal for the rest of the game. And the part that I like, too, you look at the score sheet. It's Cole Caulfield, you're arguably your best goal scorer, who gets things started with an assist from Lane Hudson. And then your captain, the guy that should be leading the charge, he scores in the third and ties it up 5 minutes later. Like, those are the guys you want to lean on when you're down, when you're in the third period, the playoff game, and they delivered. And then once you get to overtime, like, it was a wacky kind of bouncy play too, you know what I mean? So, yeah, very encouraging start for them, even though they didn't get the win. This series could go the distance, and I think there's a lot to be excited about if you're Montreal.
Especially, well, Lane Hudson, this game falls on him. I know he had 2 assists, and he played great. But, and there's always a but, you're a defenseman. So your first job is to keep the puck out of your nets. And he did not do that. 2 goals were directly a result of him. The first goal, he got caught cheating, trying to get up the ice. That's the first goal. The third goal, the overtime goal, he follows Ovi above the circle as a defenseman. They lined up on the half wall. He's supposed to go under. You're never supposed to chase a forward from behind. You're supposed to go under, cut him off in front of the net, and just give up the far away shot, the top of the circle, rather than chasing him, and then he has a free lane to the slot. And if you watch that play, Hudson chases him over the top, and Ovi is alone in front, and Beauvillier finds him, and Hudson's sitting there on his backside, and Ovi is, what, 6'2", 222 pounds? And there's no way you're getting around him. Yeah. So Lane Hudson has to play better. I know that's saying a lot, considering he had 2 assists and he was really, really good. But he has to do more. And hopefully Marty will pull him aside, Marty St. Louis, and show him the goals and say, hey, we don't need you to do too much. You're already dynamic offensively. Don't get caught up in the moment. You're a fantastic player. Just play your game. So Capitals were heavy. They were banging Hudson, Gouley all night long. Every time they were on the ice, they'd throw the puck in the corner. It was Dubois. It was Wilson. It was everybody. Everybody was keying on those two guys, and you saw it made a difference. They were turning the puck over. They were doing uncharacteristic things where they were rimming it around. They weren't poised with the puck. Adjustments for the Montreal Canadiens, Tim. Arbor Jack guy has not played, I think, 7 or 8 games now. He played 70 games in the regular season. He was a constant on that roster. Do you put him in to somehow have a little pushback? Is that even a thing in the playoffs? What do you think?
Yeah, it's a tough decision because I don't know that you do that just yet. But he is kind of like, he's one of those guys where he's very useful. And when he's on, he's so impactful every time he touches the ice. But he's kind of prone to one or two bonehead decisions in a game, whether it's a turnover or missing an assignment or just crossing the line, getting a penalty, costing your team that way. So it's kind of playing with dynamite a little bit. But I would like to think that he's old enough now, he's mature enough that he was able to control himself a little bit. But it does make me a little bit nervous. But I think if you go 2-0 and you feel like you're getting pushed around a little bit, and then you get to go home, that's a good boost. You get the home ice for the next couple of games, and you add him back in your lineup. I think that could be helpful. So I think I'm looking at how game 2 goes before I make that decision.
Well, and you can protect him a little bit matchup wise. You have the last change, so you can make sure he's not out there versus the top two lines, which he could be exposed a little bit. But I think you put him in. I think you get this kid in the lineup. You maybe Strubel, you pull him out. You're not pulling David Savard out, and Hudson and Gouley are not going anywhere. So I think Strubel is the guy that you could move out of the lineup and get Jack Guy in. He's good. I think he's good. I think he adds more than just a physical play. He's not a huge liability with the puck. So now's the time. Get in there, make him punish the other team. All right, moving on. We're staying in the East. Battle of Ontario, Leafs Centre. Everybody was salivating over this matchup. If you didn't watch the game, you check the box score. Oh, 6-2 win. What a dominating win by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Tim, was it a dominating win as the box score would lead you to believe?
Yeah, so this is the game. Like I said, I was traveling this week and I didn't get to watch as many games as I wanted to. And this is not one that I caught much of. I saw some of the highlights. I saw the score, and I think it was 6-2 or 5-2 of the time that I looked at it. I'm like, that's kind of disappointing. I expected Toronto to win. I thought Ottawa would make it a closer game. I know that they're kind of playing, you know, their first playoff game as a group versus Toronto's been together for 7 years now, or whatever. So I don't know. Was it closer than the score indicated to you when you watched it?
Well, it's a tricky thing with the Leafs because we criticize them. For the last 5, 6, 7 years, it's like their power play has been just pedestrian in the playoffs, you know? And everybody was on him about, oh gosh, if you only had a power play, you only had a power play. Then I'm reading all the articles, I'm looking at all the talking faces. Now their power play is terrific. They score 3 power play goals and everyone's like, well, 5-on-5, they didn't get any goals. Who cares? Yes, it was as lopsided as the score is. They won 6-2. They dominated this game. I don't care how you look at it. I don't care if you look at the advanced metrics. I don't care if you look at, well, in the third period, the Ottawa Senators controlled this portion of the game. It was a 6-2 win. That's a beatdown in the playoffs, especially. It was every bit of a dominant one side of the fair as the score leads it to believe. And yes, you can look into it. Like I said, well, Brady Tkachuk, 5-on-5, the power play. No. The Leafs dominated from start to finish, and that's the end of it. They got outplayed offensively. They got outplayed defensively. They definitely got outplayed in the net, and the Ottawa Senators need to fix something. I think the moment was too big for them. I think they tried to go out and just run them through the boards. I don't think that. I know that. And yes, you can, you know, ticky-tacky calls, talk about the referee, this and that. You still took penalties. You still put yourself in that position. The Leafs scored 3 power play goals. Last year when they played the Bruins in the second round, in 7 games, they scored 1 power play goal. So they tripled their output from last year in 1 game versus the Ottawa Senators. And it's interesting how they did it. Remember last year? Oh, we're not scoring. Everybody and their brother shoot the damn puck because they would go east and west and east and west and cross-ice passes, and they were trying to find that perfect backdoor play. Craig Berube. No, it's not Craig Berube, but Mark Savard has them humming. And he has them shooting the puck and shooting often. The 3 power play goals they've scored all came at 3 seconds, 8 seconds, and 9 seconds after a faceoff. That's a great philosophy. And I've said this for years. If you've been a fan of the show, listen to the show, you know I preach this. Shoot the puck early to break down the kill. and then you get into your power play. When I was at the San Jose Sharks, we had the best power play in the league. The reason it was successful, Pavelski would win the draw, it would go to Burns, and he would shoot it. And what that instantly does is it breaks down the defense because you don't know where the rebound's going. And our wingers were coached to stay wide, and you'd have two guys go to the net. So you were controlling all the rebounds wherever they went. And then you get into your power play. The kill's on its heels. They're chasing you around. That's what the Leafs did. They win the draw. They shoot the puck. Nylander on the 5-on-3. Matthews is dying for the puck. He wants it desperately. Nylander just throws it on the net, not even looking. Goal. And that's how the Leafs win. They were good on the power play. They had great goaltending. They were disciplined when they needed to be disciplined. And they didn't bite into Ottawa's attempt to turn this into a backstreet brawl. They just stayed the course. So yeah, I might take some heat because Ottawa fans are going to think Ottawa has a sliver of hope, and they do. But in the game one, it was all Leafs. Dominant performance by them.
Well, that's a great breakdown for the power play, and that kind of, it makes total sense. And one of the things we talked about last week in the Eastern Conference preview was Ottawa's need to stay out of the box because of how good the Leafs power play is. And this is what happens. And it wasn't even like they were overly, like it wasn't, they tried to play a more physical game and Toronto wasn't biting, but it wasn't like they were reckless or just loose with their sticks and pucks. They were just outworked. And then, you get penalties when that happens. So I wonder like what kind of adjustments, if you're Ottawa, you'd like to make in game two, or is it like you just try to hope for a different outcome next time around?
Well, I'm okay with penalties. Like I am. Sometimes you have to take a penalty. It is what it is. 5 of their 6 penalties happen in the offensive zone for them. So when you're in the O zone, you cannot. That's cardinal sin if you're a hockey player. You cannot do that. You cannot turn the puck over at the blue lines. You cannot give up a goal in the last 3 minutes of the game. And you cannot take a penalty in the offensive zone. That needs to be gone. Sheldon Keefe needs to talk to these guys. We're not taking penalties in the offensive zone. I don't care if it's a scrum. I don't care if it's a back check. I don't care if I'm trying to hound a puck and I trip somebody. You need to be disciplined in those situations because it burns you. It ruins the momentum. The puck goes the other end of the ice for the faceoff and it just kills you. And if I'm Sheldon Keefe, the adjustment
Travis I make Green. Is... Travis Green.
Travis Green, sorry. I keep saying Keefe. He's on the Devils. Travis Green, you need to calm down the boys. Tim Stützle led both teams in hits with 9, Tim. Does he seem like the guy who should be leading in hits with in a series when you have the huge back end with the Toronto Maple Leafs and you have Brady Tkachuk and you have other guys, Dylan Cousins? It's your goal scorer. It's your playmaker. What is he doing throwing 9 hits, Tim?
This seems like one of those weird things where he has not played playoff games yet and maybe he's overcorrecting to like what he thinks playoffs are. It's like, I'm going to go throw my body around because I think I have to. And then you stop playing your game. So there's a weird balance you need to strike where, yes, you need to rise to the moment, but you can't stop doing the things you're good at. And Tim Stützle, I love that you bring in that physical energy. I want you scoring goals. Like leave that stuff to some of the other guys. I want you to hit, 3, 4, maybe 5 on a good night. I don't need 9 hits from you. I want to see 2 or 3 more shots on net. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I wonder, I don't know, I could see a really strong bounce back game from this team. Whether or not that turns into a win, time will tell, but I think we're going to see a better team in game 2.
Yeah, you start with the goaltender, Linus Ullmark, who was just atrocious in this game. He was in for all 6 goals. Travis Green did not pull him, which I think was a good decision. After the game, he gave the interview. He said, I have the mind of a goldfish. I'll have no problem forgetting about this game. And I believe him. He's a great goaltender. But the difference between him and Stolarz in game 1, Omar did not make that save. Whether it's the Marner breakaway, whether it's the Oliver Ekman-Larsson shot down the slot, one of these other goals, yes, they're grade A chances. You have to make that save. You have to. Stolarz is making those saves. Brady Tkachuk, he's robbing Dylan Cousins. He's robbing all of the Senators because that's what you do in the playoffs. You make a save you're not supposed to make. And then your team feeds off that and the building feeds off that. And then you go. Momentum and energy is such a huge thing in the playoffs. We saw, again, I'm not going to go back to Connor McDavid. We saw it in the 3rd period with the Oilers. You could just feel it. You could feel the energy. And the Sens need that. And they need Ullmark to be the guy who keys that. So he needs to be better if they have any chance to win a couple games in the series, let alone win the series. But the Leafs, you got to give them their props, Tim. Everything that happened last year and the year before and the year before that, they addressed and they succeeded. Oh, we got a bad power play. 3 power play goals. Oh, our core four is not scoring except for Nylander. They had 7 points or 9 points. 9 points between the four of them. Oh, bad goaltending. Stolarz was exceptional. Terrific. We lose game one. 2-7 in the last 9 game ones. They won game one. So they get it. And it might be good that they aren't playing a veteran team, because when you look at the teams they've played over the last 7 years, it's just Tampa Bay, Boston, Stanley Cup champ. You know, so the veteran-laden teams, they got a chance to be the veteran team, play a young team who didn't know what to expect, and then Leafs took advantage of that. So good for them. Anything else on this team before we move on?
No, let's move on to the final series in the East that we've seen one game from so far. And this is one we're not going to spend much time on just because we can't cover everything in depth, but that's the Hurricanes and the Devils. Hurricanes won game one. They look good, and we're kind of seeing some lineup changes from the Devils too. So anything from this game that stuck out to you?
No, Logan Stankoven played fantastic. I think the Devils sucked. They had no business being in this game. Jacob Markstrom played terrific. It could have been way, way worse than what the score indicated. He was fantastic. You can't give up 40 shots in 2 periods and expect to win the game. Like, it was just all Carolina all game long. The Devils were atrocious. They should be embarrassed of themselves. Jack Hughes does not help that final score, by the way. If he's in the lineup, it's still the same result. Carolina played that good. They were dominant. I don't know what the Devils can do to adjust to be better for next game. That's how good Carolina played. They were swarming. They were smothering. They shot the puck. They had grade A chances all over the ice. Every line for the Hurricanes. And that's what they pride themselves in. That's what we talked about in the lead up in our prep. Every single line, whether it's Roslovic, Carey, and Robinson, or Jarvis, Aho, and Blake. Everybody in between. I think every line scored. Every line was aggressive. All the D-men played fantastic. Freddie Anderson still sucked. That one goal he gave up was garbage. So that's an issue for them. But yeah, Carolina looked great. They're going to win 4 rep.
Well, we both predicted Carolina in this series, and I think what we saw from game one gives us no reason to think otherwise. So yeah, I agree with you.
All right, now to the main event. The series, which a lot of people, myself included, the winner of this series going to the Stanley Cup Finals, Colorado Avalanche, Dallas Stars, tied up 1-1. Tim, what do you think of this series?
Well, game one happened, right? And it was 5-1, basically a blowout. And you watch this game and the momentum, I talked about this last week, that the Avalanche have right now with the deadline pickups, the way they're playing, the guys are getting back from injury, Landeskog is in the building. You're like, okay, 5-1, here we go. This team's about to just roll their way through at least 2-3 rounds right now. And maybe that was short thinking, because Dallas is obviously still a great team, and they battled back in game two, coming back from behind in the third period. They had an overtime goal from Colin Blackwell, of all players. And this is a great play because he's the one that's driving the rush. He's got the puck. He shoots it through traffic on net, goes and gets his rebound. There's this weird moment. It's almost like time freezes. The puck bounces in front of the goalie.
Yeah.
And everyone's sort of like, their body momentum's going a different way, and they just can't turn quick enough. And there's just no one moves for a second. And he just steps forward and lifts it right over the goalie. And that was that. And so a big juicy rebound, and the Stars tied it up. So yeah, I think this one, if we thought was going to be quick, Dallas proved that they're not going away just yet.
Yeah, it's a great series. And we all knew Mackenzie Blackwood wasn't going to stand on his head like he did in game one. And he came down to earth a little bit. He was still terrific. The goal across the board, I think, for every series so far, the goaltenders are playing great. Except for, and we'll get to, I've said this 3 times now, we'll get to Edmonton in a second. It's a really just a well-played series. The Stars are playing great. The Avalanche are playing great. The high-end guys are showing up. It's a really fun series to watch. Dallas, they needed to win. You can't lose 2-2 on your home ice and expect to win. This was a must-win game for them, and they battled back. They tied up at 3, and they win the game. So good for them. This is a great series. I expect this one to go 6 or 7. I do think Colorado takes it in the end. But boy, great. It's so fun just to sit down and watch a good hockey. Even though the NHL is so bizarre and they have all these games on different channels, and it's like you got to go through a million hoops to find the games. If you do, it's so great. There's every series is enjoyable. Every single one of them. All right. Let's talk about Jets and the Blues too.
Well, just real quick on the Avs, one of the big stories for this game was Gabriel Landeskog, who obviously is nearing his return. And I mentioned last week, I read a report that he was going to be held back until game 3 so he can return at home, give him more time to rest, whatever. And then he takes warmups and he's wearing the C. And so they took it away from Devontae. So it's him, McKinnon, and Carr with the letters on their jerseys. took warm-ups, ended up not playing. Miles Wood was back in the lineup. He was healthy. When you see that, do you think, well, first of all, he's obviously close. Do you think it was always the plan? Or do you think maybe when he took warm-ups, it didn't feel quite right, and then they kind of played it on the safe side? Or what would be the point of that whole exercise?
No, it's definitely planned. He's not going out there just for fun, but just to go out there, get the warm-ups, be with the boys. He hasn't done an NHL warm-up activity for over a year. So I think that was definitely planned. He's just getting the feel of the playoffs, and he knew he wasn't going to play. So, yeah, okay. I mean, just getting out there with the boys, getting his feet wet, so to speak. But, yeah, he'll be in for game three, especially after that loss. And, ooh, it's gonna be, he might – imagine if he starts that building, we just rock it. Crazy.
Since when did pride in your country become prejudice?
Our thoughts exactly. The Telegraph. We speak your mind.
Whether you're screaming from the stands or the sofa, Virgin Bet has even more for you to shout about this season. Because we're giving you a totally free bet builder on a selected football match every week this season. So get ready to make some noise. Join us and claim your bet builder free bet every week. Virgin Bet. A good bet.
Use Bet Builder free bet on selected match by kickoff. Min odds evens. Max one free bet, £1 to £20. Except via pop-up. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Bet responsibly. Gamblerware.org.
So, yeah, the next one. Let's talk about the Jets and the Blues. And this one's hard for me because I predicted St. Louis Blues to win this series. This was my upset. This was me sticking my neck out a little bit. And they were down 2-0 to the Winnipeg Jets, which isn't that surprising. Honestly, the Jets are the President's Trophy winners. They are the best team in hockey. And they're playing in a building that I think is probably the best home building in sports, at least during the playoffs, with the whiteout and the crowd. And they go down 2-0 in the series. So what are your thoughts on this one so far?
Did you see the one guy in the whiteout wearing the Philly jersey?
No.
Oh, it's so great. There's this picture of Hellebuck and he's getting ready for the game. And there's just one guy in an orange Philadelphia Flyers jersey. It's so funny. Just the commitment to go into Winnipeg and wear a Flyers jersey during the whiteout is fantastic. But yeah, I think Winnipeg did what they were supposed to do. The President's Trophy champs, but boy, they did not make it that easy. Blues are a good team. But it's just one of those series that the Blues are playing well. Winnipeg's just better.
Yeah.
I think that's what it boils down to. Winnipeg's is just a little bit better. They are deeper. They have higher end talent. Their goaltender's better. Their defense is better. And that's all there is to it. It would take a lot for St. Louis to overcome what is the Winnipeg Jets. And Connor Hellebuck is playing good. He's not playing fantastic, but he's playing good. And that's what the Jets were kind of worried about. That's what we talked about. And he's putting those worries to bed in the first series so far. But Tim, like Tim said when he popped out of Deirdre, what did you say? First thing, it's a boy. And then you hear Tim on the table going,
the series doesn't start until the home team loses. And this is a great example of that. They're going back to St. Louis. They're playing tomorrow night. And if the Blues win this series, I mean, win this game, it's a whole different series. So I'm very excited for this, and I still believe in my team there.
Why did you say that? Like, because it's a remarkable thing for a baby to speak at all when you're born. But to have the wherewithal to know that the series doesn't begin until the home team loses, what was the reasoning behind that, Tim?
Well, I saw an opportunity to teach and educate. And entertain and inform. So I don't really pass those opportunities up. And I saw that and I said, you know what? I'm going for it. So I think the Bruins played that night too, if I remember. So makes sense.
They won.
Yeah, they won way more.
Oh, that's funny. All right. Moving to the game we've talked about 7 times already, the Kings and the Oilers. And holy crap, when you talk about a series, you think a team has a team down and dead. And then you look over and you go, oh, no, they got Connor McDavid. After the second period, I think it was, what, 5-1? 4-1? This game was all but over. It should have been over. Everybody in the rink should have left. But when you got McDavid, Tim, anything's possible.
Yeah, the Kings were up 4-0. And like you said, you think the game's over at this point, and you're like, oh, let's just get through this night, maybe build a little bit of momentum, and let's just get ready for game two. The Oilers battle back hard, and this is where experience comes in. You know, they go to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. They've been on several playoff runs. Like, they know that they can battle back, and they believe, and they might be right, that they're a better team than the Kings. So they don't give up, and that experience pays off. And then you have, in the third period, you're down by a goal, and or 2 goals. Hyman buries it off a great feed from McDavid, who had multiple. I think he had a goal and 2 or 3 assists. through traffic with 2 minutes left, 2 minutes, 4 seconds, and all of a sudden it's a game. You got a couple minutes of ice time. It's a one goal game. 36 seconds later, a minute, 28 seconds remaining. McDavid scores on the rush, lifts it right over the goaltender. What's his name? Tie game. Huge comeback.
Kempfer.
And all of a sudden it's like, okay, we're heading to overtime. We have all the momentum. Like, we're doing everything we can. We're doing everything right. It's a different game. Everything's swinging our way. And you think it's overtime, we're bust. But no, Stuart Skinner said, hold on just a minute. And this is kind of like, I see a lot of hate for Skinner on this one. And I don't quite agree with all of it. Like, I you want him to make that save, but those weird floaters like that, it's like a changeup. Like, they move differently. They go through traffic. And so Deneau scores. He's the third man in on the rush. He lifts it kind of. It just wobbled.
No, he whiffed on it. It was a terrible shot.
Yeah. 32 seconds left. Just 46 seconds after McDavid tied it up. And the game's over at this point.
Yeah. In our Slack channel, if you're not a friend of the show on the Patreon, I don't know what the hell you're doing. In our Slack channel, I was talking with the guys about, can McDavid drag this team to the second round? With the injuries that they have, which are extensive, can he somehow drag them to the second round? And my goodness, it's amazing what he does. Like, he's done it his whole career. He hasn't been one of these guys who just goes quiet in the playoffs. No, he's a playoff performer. This guy shines when the lights are the brightest. The third period, when he just went Superman mode and just went crazy, he was unstoppable. Like, it was a fun game to watch. It reminded me when they played the Calgary Flames a couple of years ago, when they would go back and forth with the goals in the 7-6, 8-4 finals and stuff like that. It was nuts. No lead was safe. I thought the lead was safe last night.
Well, that pass to Draisaitl on the one-timer, and Kopitar, who's probably going to win the Selke, is the one who's on his hip. And he made that play through traffic. No one else does that.
And it just, you lose the game. And Connor McDavid's just 4 points, one goal, three assists. Every goal is directly related to him except for the one. Like, it must be defeating, because you get so close last year. And I know it's only one game, but thoughts creeped into your mind. Gosh, we one game within the Stanley Cup, and now we're back to here. My goaltender sucks. My defense is atrocious, like absolutely atrocious. Darnell Nurse is bad. He's bad. Like, he's just outright bad. Evan Bouchard was bad. He desperately misses Matthias Ekholm. My third line sucks. My fourth line sucks. I'm playing with Corey Perry, who's 45 years old, and that's it. And Draisaitl. That's all we got. That's all we got. So if we need to win, I need to score 4 to 5 points a night. That's it. That's the only way we win. And it's got to be defeating. It really has to be defeating, because he played a hell of a game. And then my mind starts racing. Can he win the Conn Smythe by only playing in one round? Like, just say they go to seven and he puts up 30 points and he leads the playoffs in scoring in one round. How incredible would that be? Yeah. He's sitting in Tahiti winning the Conn Smythe because he's that damn good. But boy, what, again, where do you lie on this? If you're the Kings, do you feel good about this game? Do you feel great about how it obviously ended? But boy, you almost let it slip away, and then you would have been labeled as the biggest choke artist in the NHL, giving up a 3-goal lead with 7 minutes left, 4-goal lead. Or are you the Oilers, where we sucked the first two periods, but boy, when we turn it on, and we meaning 97, we're unstoppable. So I think you kind of take the positives out of both sides, but sheesh, what a game.
Well, that was the thing with the Oilers last year, was that sometimes it was just a really good period or 10 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, that was enough to get to make up for the rest of the game and get them to overtime or get a squeak out a win or whatever. And it was usually in the back of McDavid and or Draisaitl. Usually McDavid. It seems like he's the one who rises to the moment more. And he's just
the
best player on the planet. I saw a tweet this morning. It was the Kings figured out how to beat Stuart Skinner. They figured out his weakness. It's shots on goal. Yeah. So that's what it is. And I don't really blame him for that overtime goal. But when you have your best player putting up 4 points, you need to be able to win that game. And it's very frustrating. It's defeating when you don't.
Well, do you put Calvin Pickard in that? Because Stuart Skinner, you're not winning this series with Stuart Skinner the way he's playing. You can't. Yeah. And Calvin Pickard hasn't played terrible. He hasn't played great. He's got a 9 save percentage, 2.71 goals against throughout the year. He played 36 games, so it's not like he's, you know, rusty by any means. He played quite a bit of hockey, but gosh, you can't. If Stuart Skinner throws up another game like that, you have to play another goalie. You can't.
But am I remembering correctly when Knoblauch last year, when Skinner had some bad games, he said we're sticking with him.
Yeah, no matter what. With him.
He's our guy. So yeah. Why wouldn't you expect that differently? They were game 7 of the Cup Finals last year.
No, I'm just telling you what I would do. I'm not a coach. Yeah. He can do whatever the hell he wants. Like, I'm not putting Stuart Skinner in game 3 if he plays that way again. He was awful. Absolutely atrocious. And then, I know this is big picture things. McDavid's going to be a free agent after the end of next season. Think he's going to stay? Going to want to stay after this? If they keep this up and lose in the first round and he's the only guy they got? Him and Leon? It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a Mitch Marner situation. All right, moving on. The last series. Knights Wild. Kind of the forgotten series in the West because there's so many compelling series. You got Winnipeg, President's Trophy, obviously Dallas, Colorado, and then you got the one we just talked about, LA, Edmonton. Knights are a hell of a team, and the Wild are a fun story, Tim.
Yeah, the Knights are one of those teams that a lot of people are kind of pointing out already, like we did the last couple of weeks. Like, you forget how good they are, and then they prove it to you. They are the favorites in the series. They're up 1-0. They looked really good, and I think Wild played pretty well, all things considered, but the Knights, 2 goals from Hurdle, and I saw another...
Howden, 2 goals from Howden.
Howden, sorry, and 2 points from Hurdle. I saw another graphic of, like, how they acquired these guys and what they gave up for, like, Hurdle and Stone and Hanifin and Petrangelo and Michael, all these guys. Yeah. Like, minor things, like a draft pick or a prospect who ended up going nowhere, and they bring in these cornerstone franchise pieces, and they just did it the right way, and they look like the better team. I expect nothing less for the rest of the series.
Yeah, I think we knew what the Knights were bringing to the table. I think the unknown was the Wild. What team shows up? You know, they weren't in the playoffs last year. They were the year before. But, gosh, the Wild played great. I think they played really, really solid hockey. I thought their first line was terrific. Ryan Hartman played great. They just ran into a really good Knights team. And at home, the Knights are hard to beat in the playoffs, even in the regular. Like, they're a good team at home. But if I'm Minnesota Wild, I'm feeling pretty good about myself. Kaprizov was electric. Matt Boldy with 2 goals. He played fantastic. And I'm not upset going into game 2. I think we can win game 2 and go home evened up. So I don't know. I thought the Knights would roll in this series, maybe win 4-1. After that first game, 6-7 games, Minnesota played fantastic hockey. Like, they really, really did. They were inches away from tying the game, inches away from winning. They had a ton of grade A chances in the first period. Ryan Hartman, I've been dogging this guy for years. He was fantastic. Both of Matt Boldy's goals, he was the centerman on the ice. It wasn't Joel Eriksson Ek. It was him, Kaprizov, and Boldy. I don't know if they won't continue with that, but it just might not be a coincidence. So it's very good. Then the Knights, obviously the big guys played, but the difference there was Brandon Saad played great. Doro Fiev, whatever the hell his name is, maybe the best player on the ice. Yeah. So they're third and fourth lines, and Doro Fiev, they're very noticeable. It was a fun game, fun series, I think. This is very encouraged by this first round matchup so far in the NHL. Very, very good games. No stinkers. I'm having a good time. I'm having a really good time.
All these games have been great. And that's kind of the big conversation right now everyone's having is just how great these series have been and the starts that we had. And just every night, there's overtime, there's close games, there's like all this drama and stuff. And it's just a lot of fun to watch every night.
Speaking of drama, and guys not having a good time, we're back to Detroit. I know everybody loves when I talk about Detroit and Steve Yzerman. I get a lot of positive feedback about how I feel about the Yzer plan and all everything that goes with it. Well, their captain, Dylan Larkin. I played with him in the All-Star game in 2016. I had dinner with him, so we're kind of best friends. He apparently listens to the show, and now he's drinking my Kool-Aid. This plan sucks, Steve. We need to change. I'm frustrated with it. He gave his year-end press conference. He's the captain of the team. He's the guy you're building around for the present and the future. And he's fed up. And he was directly asked, Dylan, what did you think of the deadline this year? You guys were pushing for the playoffs. You were right there. And he said, quote, it was hard that we didn't do anything. And I felt the group we kind of didn't gain any momentum from the trade deadline. And guys were kind of down about it, said a visibly frustrated Larkin. It'd be nice to add something and bring a little bit of a spark to the ice and maybe a morale boost as well. End quote. He also mentioned that it affected their play because they just felt like they didn't add anything. So it was tough for them. As a former player, and we talked about this, Tim, at the deadline, what the GM does at the deadline sets the stage for the rest of the season. It gives you a great indication of how he feels about your team. And if you're right there, you're on the bubble, you're pushing for the playoffs, points away, still 20 games, 10, 15 games left in the season, easily make the playoffs if you make the right moves. And your coach, the Hall of Fame, just Mount Rushmore, everybody loves him in Detroit, Steve Yzerman, he goes out and he adds Peter Mrazek and Craig Smith, or whatever the hell the Smith's first name is, a third string goaltender and a fourth line player. And you're sitting there and you're Dylan Larkin. And you're like, I've been here for 9 effing years, man. And we're right there and you're adding nothing. You're making us worse. Making us worse. What am I doing here? What am I doing? I have a contract that ends, what, 5 more years probably? You just signed a big ticket a little bit ago. We have all these good young talents who are going to be off of their entry-level contract soon and they're going to need a big raise. Like, what are we doing? I don't understand the reasoning behind the Iser plan. And yeah, I'd be pissed too. I'd be damn pissed. And he's voicing it. Finally, someone's pushing back against the demigod Steve Yzerman in Detroit, challenging his Yzer plan, the big grand scheme that no one knows what the hell he's doing. But oh boy, they won a couple Stanley Cups in Tampa Bay. So this guy's got to know what he's doing because he's just going to do the same thing in Detroit. Wake up, Detroit. Wake up. This guy sucks at GM. He's terrible.
I have a couple of thoughts, but first I just got to ask, like, when you saw this quote, how validating was that? Did that make give you the warm and fuzzies when you saw this?
6 to midnight, if you know what I mean. It was so great to finally hear a player just push back against him. And this is your franchise guy.
Right.
This is your captain.
Of all people.
Of all people. It's not Lucas Raymond or a young guy getting frustrated. He's been there for 9 years. It's him. Like he is signed till 2031. Like he's not going anywhere. He is your highest paid player. He is your franchise. And he's frustrated now. So I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
I mean, the Blue Jackets added Luke Kunin. Like they were a team. They were behind. This is before their late season push. And they added at the deadline. You know what I mean? And then you have to tie the things together. Like part of the reason they played so well down the stretch is the boost they get, not just from the player, but the belief and the sign off from the GM. So yeah, it's frustrating. And for Dylan Larkin, of all people, who never makes comments like this, he's invisible in the press. He is vanilla. He is, you know, Main Street. And there he goes calling out his GM. It carries a lot of weight. So yeah, I think you have to look at this closely. And I wonder what his next conversation, if he's already had it, with CVY is going to be.
Oh, I'm sure he's had it, and Stevie's trying to put out the fire and say, oh, you know, I should have made a move and this and that. But like, I get why Yzerman didn't make any moves. They're not going to win the Stanley Cup. He is flawed when he builds a team. Like, I love Patrick Kane. Do you think adding Patrick Kane was the right move? I love Tarasenko. Do you think adding Tarasenko was the right move? And when he brought in David Perron and Andrew Kopp and all these, it's not an Yzerman Red Wings show, but I'm glad Dylan Larkin said that. And we'll dig into that in the summer because absolutely. Another strange quote from Jim Rutherford on the other side of the country in Vancouver. What is he saying about Quinn Hughes, who you think you would want to make happen?
This is a really strange one. Everyone's talking about this. And this is kind of like the theme here is just the exit interviews with the press and everything before they go home for the summer. And Jim Rutherford was asked about Quinn Hughes' future with the team and the franchise. And this is his long quote. He said, quote, "The one thing that we will be sure of is that we have enough cap space to offer him the kind of contract that he deserves. That's the one thing we can prepare for. And it may not boil down to money with him. He said before he wants to play with his brothers, and that would be partly out of our control. In our control, if we brought his brothers here. So there's many moving parts here. I agree 100% this franchise cannot afford to lose a guy like Quinn Hughes. We will do everything we can to keep him here. But at the end of the day, it'll be his decision." Okay, this is so, so strange. He wasn't even at, like, he was the one who brought up the brother thing. And Quinn Hughes, like, yeah, Brady and Matthew want to play together too. But like, you wouldn't, this is so, so weird. And by the way, Quinn Hughes is under contract for two more seasons. He's not an expiring contract and neither are his brothers. I don't know why you like, why are we even talking about this? It's really weird.
He's laying the groundwork for Quinn Hughes' exit. That's what he's doing. He's playing the long game. He's probably negotiated with Quinn maybe for an extension. He's talked to him and kicked the tires on that a little bit. And Quinn Hughes, rightfully so, is frustrated. I don't want to buy into this franchise just yet based on what happened with JT Miller, what's going on with Elias Pettersson, Brock Besser, what he's doing. So he's laying the groundwork. He's saying, oh, Quinn wants, he desperately wants to play with his brother. It's like those guys are just like attached at the hip. They're crazy. He wants to be with Luke and Jack. They're just like the three amigos. If I'm Quinn Hughes, I'm like, suck eggs, buddy. I want to win. I want a good team. I don't want a drama-filled soap opera every single damn year. And I've been in Vancouver for what, 6, 7 years? I'm the captain of the team. Every damn year there's issues. We got Bruce, there it is. We got Rick Tocchet. We got all these things going on. I got the JT Miller drama. I got guys fighting in practice. And he's like, if you haven't noticed, I'm a stud. One of the best defensemen in the league. You need me. Build around me. And then Jim Rutherford made. Jim Rutherford, great, great GM. I feel like he gets ahead of his skis a little bit. And what I mean by that is I think he thinks he's better than he actually is. And he just says things like this where it's like, why are you saying this? There's no benefit from it, from any standpoint. And then he, like you mentioned here in the agenda, Tim, you could potentially get accused of tampering now because you bring in the aspect of, well, maybe we go get his brothers because he wants to play with his brothers so bad. It doesn't make sense to me. And I think he's just an old school guy who thinks his crap doesn't stink. And he's just saying stuff. And it's like, Jim, what? Shut up. Be quiet. There's no good that comes from this, my man.
I think you're right about the whole softening the blow thing for Quinn's eventual exit, too. Because, like, anyone that works in, like, the corporate world, if you know tomorrow is 85 and sunny and your boys are going to the beach and you're going to take the day off, the day before, like today, you're dropping little lines to your coworkers about how you don't feel good or like you got your stomach issues. And so tomorrow when you call out in the morning, you're like, oh yeah, he wasn't feeling great yesterday. You know, like you're planting the little seeds to like ease that conversation. That's exactly what's happening here. And now it sucks for Quinn because this is all he's going to be asked about for a while through the summer. Like when he comes back next year, he's like, hey, how was training with your brothers? Have you guys talked about playing each other? What's your response to Rutherford's comments? What's your future here? What are you thinking? What'd you eat last night? It's like now he has to answer for this. And it sucks that, you know, for all the drama of this surrounding this team and surrounding this locker room, the GM, especially an experienced one, you're supposed to be the grown up in the room. You're supposed to be the one that's like, that's easing this stuff. And instead he's fueling the fire. It's really bizarre. And I'm not happy if I'm a member of this team.
No, the Canucks just can't get out of their own way. They really can't. Like they have great players, beautiful rink, nice city. You think it's just every ingredient for a successful hockey franchise. They just can't. They can't help themselves. All right. Moving on to Pittsburgh. The opposite of the Vancouver Canucks, as far as like location and good GMing and great contracts and great players, other than Sidney Crosby. Kyle Dubas, what did he have to say about Erik Karlsson?
Yeah, this is just a little quote that I just couldn't help but include here on today's show. He said, quote, his actions have to match his ambitions. So reading the lines here.
It's a great quote.
This is something you put in your wall and you remind yourself every day. It's like you can't just want it. You've got to go out and follow through. And Erik Karlsson's got all the talent in the world, and I don't think his action matches ambition. This is so succinctly put by Kyle Dubas. So the Rutherford thing is different. But when a player or GM calls out his player to the press publicly, there's a lot that leads up to that behind the scenes. So for him to do that, it's going to carry some weight.
It goes both ways with Kyle Dubas, though, because Karlsson could just throw the Uno reverse card and be like, yeah, likewise, you signed me here, bro. Like you thought we were going to extend the careers of Crosby and Letang and Malkin by bringing me in here? Are you crazy? Like you think I'm a good defenseman? I'm not. I'm just a points machine. So these guys are both living in la-la land, where they just think they're better than they are. And I don't know why they have that feeling. I get by Karlsson because in his first 5, 6, 7 years, he was electric. But I feel like he was protected in a certain way. He was playing with good defensemen around them, and he was able to do the things he would be able to do. But now he just doesn't give a crap. Like, he's all offense all the time, and he's not back checking. He's not getting in shot lane. He's not doing anything. He's out there to get points, and that's all he's there to do. Kyle Dubas thinks he's this magician, that he can just sprinkle something on a team and they're going to win a Stanley Cup. And you go to an aging Pittsburgh team that needs to be rebuilt, needs to be reworked, and you make it worse by bringing in veterans with bad contracts. And you think you have that ability to get them out of the hole. Well, you know, we're going to re-sign Raquel, Malkin, Crosby, Letang, Rust. It's like, buddy, this has been the team for the last 3-4 years, and they've been bad, mediocre, and you're re-signing everybody? No, we're going to bring in Erik Karlsson. That'll make it better. Okay, that made it a lot better. So I think both of these guys need to take a reality check on who they are and what they can do. But it's great, Dubas is calling them out. I think that's nice. Does a zebra ever change his spots? Carlson's not going to change. You know, like, he is who he is at this point in his career. He's 30-some years old. He makes $10 million. He wants to get points. Like, he wants to hit dingers. That's what he wants to do. You know what I mean? He ain't bunting. He's not legging out a single. He's here to hit dingers, Tim. That's all he's going to do. So put him on the power play, let him go, and take it for what it's worth.
Well, there's some great quotes here, and you know, with all the playoff excitement going on, there's also a list with a lot of great hockey, meaty stuff. We can get some of these exit interviews from the team that missed the playoffs, and as they get eliminated over the next few weeks. So I bet there'll be more stuff like this that'll be fun to talk about. So a couple more games tonight. Carolina, New Jersey, game 2. Toronto, Ottawa, game 2. Florida, Tampa, game 1.
Weird.
This will be a lot of fun. I think this one goes the distance in Minnesota, Vegas, game 2.
Yeah, we will check back in with everybody later this week. I hope you are having fun like we are, and thank you for listening. Cheers, everybody.
What makes a good bet? At Virgin Bet, we think it's a simple bet, a responsible bet, a last-minute winner when you're down to 10 men kind of bet, with generous offers. A bet that puts sport first. Sound like your kind of bet? Then you're ready to get started. Sign up and get £20 in free bets when you bet £10 on sports. Virgin Bet, a good bet.
New members, min bet settled in first 14 days, 1.5 minimum odds. Free bets valid 7 days on sports. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Bet responsibly. 18 plus, gamblerware.org.
Remind me to bring photo ID.
Reminder set.
Babe, can you make sure I don't forget my photo ID when I vote?
All right, love.
You'll need photo ID to vote on the 1st of May. Don't have ID? Apply for free voter ID now. Find out more at electoralcommission.org.uk/voter ID.